It is Wednesday, July 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump at the NATO meeting in Brussels accuses Germany of being a captive of Russia.
Germany is totally controlled by Russia.
The Trump administration imposes more tariffs on Chinese imports, and a new startup brings robot assistance into the homes of the elderly. It's all ahead. A meeting of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization began on a confrontational note on Wednesday, with President Trump singling out Germany for criticism. During a meeting with NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, Trump pointedly criticized Germany for allowing Russian energy company Gazprom to construct the Nord Stream 2 pipeline through its waters.
Well, I have to say, I think it's very sad when Germany makes a massive oil and gas deal with Russia, where you're supposed to be guarding against Russia, and Germany goes out and pays billions and billions of dollars a year to Russia. So we're protecting Germany, we're protecting France, we're protecting all of these countries, and then numerous of the countries go out and make a pipeline deal with Russia, where they're paying billions of dollars into the coffers of Russia. So we're supposed to protect you against Russia, but they're paying billions of dollars to Russia, and I think that's very inappropriate. And the former chancellor of Germany is the head of the pipeline company that's supplying the gas. Ultimately, Germany will have almost 70% of their country controlled by Russia with natural gas. So you tell me, is that appropriate? I mean, I've been complaining about this from the time I got in. It should have never been allowed to have happened. But Germany is totally controlled by Russia.
VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman is traveling with the president. Speaking from Brussels, he tells me about the confrontation.
Well, this was at a breakfast with the NATO Secretary General, not anyone from Germany, but, you know, you've heard the phrase breaking bread. Well, this was some sort of sour bread, I guess, at breakfast, because the U.S. president really went after Germany. He focused on a deal that Germany has made with a Russian energy company, Gazprom, to construct this $10 billion Nord Stream 2 pipeline through its waters. And the president said, you know, here we are defending Germany while they're paying billions and billions of dollars a year to Russia. So how can you be tougher when a country is getting its energy from the country you want protection against? And the NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg noted that there are differences among NATO members about the pipeline and other issues. But he did give President Trump credit for beginning a reversal of declining defense spending among NATO members. And he also praised Trump for contributing extra money to the defense of Europe since Trump took office.
Was German Chancellor Angela Merkel present at that point?
No, she came later, and when she arrived at NATO, she made a quite a pointed remark saying because she grew up in East Germany, she knows what it's like to have been under Soviet domination, and the United Federal Republic of Germany makes its own policies and it's independent. Subsequent to that, there was what's called a poolside meeting. This is sort of an informal one-on-one meeting between the U.S. president and the German chancellor. And after that, a group of reporters was brought in to the room, and President Trump acknowledged that he did raise this issue with Merkel, and she replied that she looks forward to continued discussions with the United States because the United States and Germany are partners in so many ways. So she wasn't going to engage at that point in rebutting Trump, at least on camera.
You know, it was interesting because as Trump was leaving the White House for this trip, he was talking about various meetings that he would be having. And he said that he thought that his meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin would be among the easiest of the meetings and that, you know, there might be some more strains in meetings with Europe. European leaders. This is rather curious because these leaders of European countries have been very long-time allies of the United States.
Right, but these meetings that he has been having with these allies have been relatively strained because if it's not haranguing NATO members to contribute more to the common defense, there has been a complaint from the U.S. president about trade and what he perceives as an unfair trade imbalance. And after he leaves here tomorrow, Thursday, he goes to London and will be meeting with Theresa May, the British prime minister, who suddenly finds herself embroiled in a big domestic political upheaval stemming from what is essentially intra-party disagreement among the conservatives over terms for the country's exit from the European Union, known as Brexit. And Trump, when leaving the White House, also sort of stuck his finger into that one as well, commenting about Boris Johnson, who had resigned as May's foreign minister. And Trump referred to Johnson as someone who's been very, very supportive and very nice to him and said, maybe I'll speak to him when I get over there, something that Theresa May probably would desire that Trump not do when he gets to London.
VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman reporting from Brussels. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Thai officials say all 12 boys rescued from the flooded cave are in good condition. A British man's condition is upgraded after he was poisoned by a nerve agent. 10 people are killed as suicide bombers raid an Afghan education office, and Facebook faces its first fine in the data scandal involving Cambridge Analytica. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Israel was planning to join a small group of countries that have landed a spacecraft on the moon. Representatives from SpaceIL, a nonprofit organization, and Israel Aerospace Industries have announced their collaborative effort to land a spacecraft on the lunar surface. The spacecraft is only 1.5 meters tall, 2 meters in diameter when its legs are deployed, and weighs about 600 kilograms. While no specific launch date has been determined, plans are for the Israeli spacecraft to be sent into space aboard a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket that will take off from Cape Canaveral, Florida, sometime this December. The voyage is expected to take a couple of months, with lunar touchdown planned for February 13, 2019. Once on the moon, the spacecraft will take videos and still images and measure the moon's magnetic field. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, battle lines form over President Trump's nominee to the Supreme Court. China has expressed shock at the Trump administration's decision to prepare 10% tariffs on another $200 billion of Chinese imports, covering thousands of products over what it calls Beijing's unfair trade practices. China's Commerce Ministry Wednesday called the decision totally unacceptable and vowed to respond. The proposed new tariffs follow the decision to impose duties in two stages on $50 billion in Chinese goods. In a statement, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Leitzinger said the Trump administration has patiently urged China to stop its unfair practices, open its market, and engage in true market competition. Christine McDaniel, a senior research fellow at George Mason University in Virginia, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, it is hard to argue the world's two largest economies are not in a trade war.
This is starting to look like this tit-for-tat escalation is starting to get serious, and this administration is not fooling around. I mean, if you read USTR's 301 report, it paints quite a compelling picture of 21st century economic espionage by China against U.S. firms. And not only is the Chinese government looking the other way, but it also looks like they might be facilitating, if not outright sponsoring, these acts. So you know, it's no surprise that the president is very concerned, and he has broad support from Republicans and Democrats alike for addressing these concerns.
So it sounds to me like you feel they're warranted.
A strategy to address these legitimate concerns is warranted. And so I think the question is, what is the best strategy for the United States? So far, all we're seeing is tariffs, investment restrictions, which, you know, based on genuine national security concerns, definitely warranted. A tariff is a tax. And in today's global economy, American manufacturers are just simply tied to suppliers from outside the U.S. for their competitiveness. So when we tax those imports, we're taxing American manufacturers, not to mention consumers. And that really handicaps our own manufacturers.
There were negotiations early on, but are there any talks about resolving this matter?
They actually have been sort of quiet on this front. I don't know if that's a sign of decreased number of leaks or, you know, there's just no action. This new escalation is reportedly a response to China's response. This is how you get going into a trade war, right? One side acts, the other responds, and then the other side, you know, the original side responds to the other side responding, and this can soon spiral a bit out of control. And that's very concerning, that nobody wins in a trade war. The thing here, though, is that our president will be up for re-election in a number of years. The Chinese president will not. This is a little different than what we're used to. It's not really clear if China feels like they have anything to lose or not. Of course, in terms of economics, they do. China's economic growth is very reliant on its connectedness to the global economy. You know, they may be willing to just go for it in terms of a tariff war with the U.S. To prove that, you know, they can withstand it. That said, though, I would be very surprised if that happened.
Christine McDaniel said the longer the tariff battle goes on, the greater the impact will be felt on both economies. She said trade actions against China would be more effective if they were done in concert with America's allies. And she also expects China to eventually change its policies away from state-owned enterprises and implement more market-oriented rules and regulations, but predicts that will take time. Battle lines began to form Tuesday in Washington for the upcoming Senate confirmation fight over President Trump's Supreme Court nominee, federal judge Brett Kavanaugh. Republicans have embraced Kavanaugh as a nominee who could shift the Supreme Court in a more conservative direction for a generation. Opposition Democrats have vowed a fight, fearing Kavanaugh's addition to the high court could roll back hard-fought victories on abortion and gay rights. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh arriving at the Capitol with Vice President Mike Pence and a meeting with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
I think the president made an outstanding nomination. We look forward to the confirmation process, and it'll unfold in the next few weeks.
President Trump announced Kavanaugh's nomination Monday at the White House.
What matters is not a judge's political views, but whether they can set aside those views to do what the law and the Constitution require.
Kavanaugh is a sitting federal judge and previously worked in the White House for President George W. Bush.
A judge must interpret statutes as written, and a judge must interpret the Constitution as written, informed by history and tradition and precedent.
Democrats immediately signaled a fight over Kavanaugh with the Supreme Court as a backdrop. Among those leading the charge was Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer.
For every American who cares about women's health, about protections for people with pre-existing conditions, about civil rights, labor rights, LGBTQ rights, environmental rights, now is the time to fight.
If confirmed, Kavanaugh will replace retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy. Kennedy was a conservative who sided with the court's liberal minority in key cases, including abortion and gay rights. analyst John Fortier.
Both sides feel like a lot is at stake. The court has been roughly divided 5-4 on the conservative side, but Anthony Kennedy was the most swingy justice, the one who would move from the conservative to the liberal side of the court on a number of important issues.
Democrats worry that a more conservative court could undo the famous abortion rights decision known as Roe v. Wade, says legal expert Jonathan Turley.
It's probably not likely that we will see a frontal assault on Roe v. Wade. It's possible, but it's much more likely that the court will chip away at Roe v. Wade.
Republicans have only a slim Senate majority, but Democrats will have a difficult time blocking Kavanaugh, says Stacey Hawkins.
The best that they can hope for is that this will really ignite this issue for not only the midterm elections, but for the 2020 presidential election, right? That Democrats will be much more energized around understanding the Supreme Court as a key political voting issue in our elections.
Republicans hope to confirm Kavanaugh in time for the next Supreme Court session in October. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is International Edition. In this age of the smart machine, robots are increasingly playing roles in different fields, from construction and hospitality to the military and art. When it comes to caregiving for the elderly, which depends mainly on human interaction, it turns out robots can also help. But will they replace humans? Faiza Almasri went searching for an answer. Faith Lapidus narrates.
88-year-old Olga Robertson has been living in her home for decades. The mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother says she loves her home and doesn't feel the need to move out. She's physically active and has a companion, a professional caregiver, who spends 3 hours with her every day.
Well, she cooks for me, and she does a good job. She takes me to appointments and things like that, and whatever I want to do. Sometimes we go to walk in the mall. If it's, you know, cold out in the wintertime.
But when her caregiver is not around, Robertson still has company. Rudy, an intelligent home care companion.
Okay, Rudy.
Are you enjoying your day?
Yes.
That's great. Is there anything I can help you with?
You can have a conversation with them, see. It's somebody to talk to and who responds.
Not only talking, but entertaining as well, telling her jokes and even dancing with her.
Would you like to dance with me?
Yes. It's cute, isn't it? I remember doing this dance in high school. But he does a good job.
In addition to keeping her mentally and physically engaged, Rudy provides access to emergency services around the clock, keeps track of misplaced items, and reminds Robertson about appointments and when it's time for her medicine.
I got to be kind of famous in the neighborhood because of this robot.
The robotic caregiver was inspired by a need that Anthony Nunez saw as he and his mother cared for his aging grandmother.
As I grew older, I realized we weren't the only family facing this problem. There are thousands of families facing the same issue, most cases even worse, where they have a loved one that they're taking care of, and the cost becomes an issue. And so what we wanted to do was design a robot that's easy to use, designed specifically for seniors, but also affordable.
Nunes founded INF Robotics and created Rudy.
Rudy's a companion, talking with you and engaging you. We're leveraging the artificial intelligence within our platform to help seniors make better decisions to allow them to stay in their home. We're also working with machine learning on our platform and some cognitive computing to identify patterns within the senior's daily habits that could lead to an adverse event, and identifying those ahead of time, and then using our cloud computing on our platform to get that information to the caregivers before something happens.
Rudy is helping a number of clients at Sencura, a non-medical in-home care company founded by Cliff Glier.
We're dealing with older adults that are typically 80, 90, 100 years old. So this kind of technology is very new to them. So there will be some, some closer looks at it. People, I would say, are interested once they learn more and we have an opportunity to show them Rudy and the capabilities.
Glier stresses that Rudy is not a replacement for human caregivers.
So he's around to help out, where the caregivers typically will come in and may help with some bathing or dressing, things that at this point Rudy can't do. But beyond that, Rudy simply fills the growing gap.
The robot supplements what in-home caregivers do for the growing population of seniors who prefer to age in place with a little help from friends. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thanks very much, Faith. That is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has imposed sanctions on three Nicaraguan individuals with connections to the government who are involved in serious human rights abuses and corruption. The actions were taken in connection with the ongoing crisis in Nicaragua, including the horrific violence perpetrated by security forces against demonstrators. Protests against the government of President Daniel Ortega have been taking place since April 18th. According to the U.S. Treasury Department, the violent response by the government has resulted in the death of at least 220 demonstrators and injuries to nearly 1,500. It also included beating of journalists, attacks against local TV and radio stations, and assaults on mothers mourning the deaths of their children. The three designated individuals are Nicaraguan's National Police Commissioner Francisco Javier Diaz Madriz, Fidel Antonio Moreno Briones, who serves as the main link between municipal governments and the Sandinista National Liberation Front, known as the FSLN, and Jose Francisco Lopez Centeno, president of the state-owned oil company Petronic and vice president of Albanisa, a private company that imports Venezuelan petroleum products. He also serves as treasury of the ruling FSLN party. U.S. Undersecretary of Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence Sigal Mendelker said in a statement that President Ortega and his inner circle continue to violate basic freedoms of innocent civilians while ignoring the Nicaraguan people's calls for the democratic reforms they demand, including free, fair, and transparent elections. The U.S. sanctions, she declared, are part of the U.S.'s ongoing campaign under the Global Magnitsky Program to hold individuals who engage in human rights abuses and corruption to account. The sanctions mean that any property or assets these individuals hold in the United States are blocked, and U.S. persons are prohibited from engaging in transactions with them. In a separate statement, State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said that the sanctions show the United States will expose and hold accountable those responsible for the Nicaraguan government's ongoing violence and intimidation campaign against its people. These actions must end. Ms. Nauert said the United States supports the Episcopal Conference of Nicaragua's efforts to advance negotiations to resolve the crisis and urges full implementation of the June 15th National Dialogue Agreement on Human Rights as a critical component. The United States, she said, also supports calls for early, free, fair, and transparent elections. We will continue to monitor the situation closely and take additional actions as events warrant.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.